Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Ben, you and I have been talking about doing this for a while, and I'm so excited with this round table that we have assembled in the studio right now. We are about to break out a bovine round table for you, and we have the right specialists. So here's how this came together. A buddy of mine that lives one neighborhood over invited me over for steaks one night. Our kids are friends, and we had met before through our buddy Bacon, who lives down the street.
My neighbor.
And so we were like, all right, let's get together. So
You have a friend named Bacon?
Yeah, he's sitting right there over your right shoulder.
Man, that guy's got to be the coolest guy of all time to be named Bacon.
Don't eat that guy.
You don't waste that nickname.
No, you don't.
You only give it to the best.
You don't give it to anybody.
Do you see his shirt?
Bacon.
It says Bacon on it.
Hell yes.
Now that is the voice of Ian Hastings. Ian is my neighbor. And we went to dinner over at his house, and he started talking about what he was doing. I was like, it's the most interesting thing I've heard in my life. So Ian, before we go further, tell everyone what it is that you do and who you do it for.
So I'm a strategic accounts manager for Cargill, and I work with the largest cow-calf operations and feedlots that are corporate partners with Cargill here in North America, here in the United States and Canada.
Okay, and just so you know, if you're listening, he said corporate partner. He's wearing a cowboy hat. He's wearing a shirt with pearly buttons, jeans, and boots. So that's not too corporate, but in this case, it's corporate.
That would be correct.
All right. So we're sitting there talking that night. He's like, you know, we got to go do the Steak 101 class over at Local Yokel. I was like, oh my God, Ben lives at Local Yokel. I mean, how often do you go by there and get meats?
I try to go as much as I can. I mean, when I had those giant bone-in ribeyes, it was 5 pounds of meat, and I was clapping them together, and that's one of the most watched things I've had on Instagram. That's Local Yokel. And then I was telling Gavin, anytime I'm anywhere near McKinney, I'm going to Local Yokel.
Okay, well, standing to my right, your left on the radio dial is the man behind Local Yokel, the great Matt Hamilton, who ran that Steak 101 class I went to, and I was like, this has got to happen on our radio. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys having us on. Glad to come down and talk more meat with you.
Absolutely. Man, the way he ran this class, it was just incredible. There's 3 stages to it. My favorite part is we went back into the butcher shop part of the operation, and he showed us every cut of meat and the name of it and the whole history behind it. And it got me real excited. And so I was talking, and I was like, man, we got to get you guys in studio. He goes, well, if we do that, we need one more guy. And he is to my left. You're right on the radio dial. He is Dr. Dusty Abney. Hello, good doctor. How are you?
Howdy. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. And you're from Texas Tech. Well, you weren't born there. You went to college there.
I got 3 degrees from there. So
3 are they called beef degrees?
Animal science was the way we put it. I tell people I'm triple inbred red raider. And I'm from East Texas, so maybe it's quadruple.
Right. Texas Tech is always the national champion.
And not only that, you were at one point during your Texas Tech stay the quote unquote masked red raider rider.
We say masked rider.
Okay.
I don't mean to be pedantic, but that is kind of my job to be pedantic. So I will be, because technically correct is the best kind of correct. So I was the masked rider in the 1998-99 school year.
What does that entail?
That entails going to every goat roping and county fair within about a 400-mile radius of Lubbock and going to all the football games and everything that goes with that. It was an outstanding experience.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for being a part of this. We have a lot of questions. If you guys disagree on some, you can start yelling at each other. We're okay with that. I know we're all fiery individuals in here. So, Ben, where is the first place that you would like to get started on our expansive bovine roundtable?
Now, I went to Texas Tech. I didn't graduate from there because I had too much fun. So you got 3 degrees out of that place. I got none. I mean, I got 3 semesters out of it.
Average between us, though.
That's right. We're averaging 1.5
degrees. You guys are smart as hell and really learned.
You were at Texas Tech. So we have this drop we play on the show that Texas Tech is always the national champion. And we were like, what in the hell are they talking about? And because we're like, it's not basketball. It's not baseball. It's not football. What are they talking about? They're talking about you, aren't they? Are they talking about the meat program there at Texas Tech? What is that?
Well, now I didn't go through the meat program.
Yeah,
we got a little sidetracked there on what I did while I was there.
I ran a unsuccessful meat program during my 3 semesters.
Now watch as I change the subject very subtly.
There you
segue.
Go.
I'm actually a beef cattle nutritionist. I specialize in cow calf and stalker operations. I work with Ian. So
okay,
we joke that he's my nerd pimp. So. That's what I do. He's got several of us, so I'm a member of the nerd herd, and so I study beef cattle nutrition there at Texas Tech.
Do you? I know Ian travels a bunch. Do you travel as much as Ian? Do you guys travel together? How does your job work with one another?
Until the TSA had some things to say about us traveling together too much, we do travel together quite a bit. It just depends on what's going on and where we need to be and where we are in a relationship with a customer. If it's new, then the Dusty and Ian show goes on the road If it's been there a while, then they don't need to see both of us at once.
This is such an amazing honor for us to have all you guys here. So many of our listeners, we all barbecue. We all consider ourselves steak masters on the grill and whatnot, brisket. Here's what I want to know from you guys. I have this argument with my wife, and she believes, and don't feel compelled to get her side in this just because I said that out loud. She talks about going to places like Costco and buying steaks and stuff there. And I talk about going to a place like Local Yokel. It's a little bit more expensive, but there's the extra marbling. And I feel like even if you overcook a steak from Local Yokel, it's still perfect. If you overcook a steak from a different place, from a grocery store, man, it gets real bad real quick. And so that's at least my perception. And so my question is, how much of a difference is there in quality from the steaks you would get at a large grocery chain versus what you would get at a top-notch farm-to-market to grocer.
Your wife's right. There's no difference between the steaks you buy at Costco and the steaks you buy at Local Yokel, except we know the genetic history of our cattle for the last 80 to 150 years. Hmm. We know the birth ranch. We know the birth date. We know the weaning date. We know their average daily gain the entire time we had them. We know the minute they were harvested, and they've been in our possession the entire time. We know all the drugs they were never given. We know if they were ever doctored, on what day they were doctored, what they were given. But other than that, it's the same.
Yes. Okay.
So hold on.
Pull that. I'm going to dunk on my wife with that.
And this is where
you can just buy meat off of a truck. Same thing. You know, the guy on the side of the road, 20 ribeyes, $20. Same thing.
We just saw that. I know. And dude, this is what you need to explain, because your wife is all about healthy eating. What Matt is basically telling everybody, yeah, you can get that steak or you can get the healthy steak. We're not serving you bad beef. We're serving you the right kind of beef.
Right. Well, so we're focused on as little drugs are bad. So we're trying to stay away from subtherapeutic antibiotics, stay away from beta agonist growth regulators. What we focus on is heart healthy omega-3 fats. We do that via genetics with our Wagyu program and through the forage program with our grass-fed, grass-finished. So cattle on pasture tend to produce higher levels of omega-3 heart healthy monounsaturated fats, as do the Wagyu genetically. So that combined with, you know, when you go to the grocery store, you just don't know what you're getting. So ground beef, scary as heck, right? But you just don't know what you're getting. When you go to a restaurant, sometimes you really don't know what you're getting, because there's a lot of fun games that can be played there where they run steaks through a needle machine where they're injected, they're brined. You've got grocery store ground beef can have shelf life extenders. You know, there's a lot of fun games that can be played with beef. I had a lady ask me a very great question Saturday. She goes, I hear what you're saying. You're preaching good, cowboy. Can we really feed America on what you're doing? And I say, yes, we can. Ian Deere agrees with me. I say, yes, we can. But America, guess what? You got to quit being cheap SOBs. You got to quit being the cheapest country in the world. You can't ask those guys over there to do what I do and show up and get $9.99 a pound ribeyes. All right. It's going to cost more. So if you look at other first world countries spending 14 to 17% of their disposable income on groceries, and America's coming in at 9.5%, cheap food costs somebody somewhere. And a big thing that I'm about, unfortunately, it costs our farmers and ranchers producing food for America below cost since 1930. It costs the consumer in things that we do in our system to deliver cheaper groceries. Mm-hmm. So just ask for something better. I'll produce it. These guys will produce it. Ask for cheaper product, which is what we've asked for in this country. We'll produce it. We just need to educate the consumer to ask for something better.
I want to hear the counterpoint on that.
Well, I would just say there that I agree with Matt on a lot of his points. I would reiterate that we have the safest, most wholesome food supply in the world.
Says USDA.
Oh, shots fired.
That's a favorite. Hi, I'm with the USDA. We have the safest, cheapest food supply in the world.
And it's his job to say that.
I don't always agree with the government on stuff, but I do agree with them on that. And the great thing about our beef cattle industry in the United States and about our market in the United States is that choice is there for the consumer. And I think that's what's really important. Wherever you choose to spend your food dollar, whether that be at Local Yokel with Matt because you want a product that's got a specific group of specifications with it, or whether your budget tells you that you can't quite do that, then maybe you need to go back and look a little bit different at what you're spending on your product and what you're getting out of it. I want our consumers to be informed. I want them to know the differences between what we can and can't do. But if you look at our industry in the last 100 years, we can move with the market, and we have moved with the markets. You know, we produce a leaner animal than we did 50 years ago because the American consumer said we want leaner cuts of beef, and so we gave them that. We may have overdone that because really lean cuts of beef Agreed. Are not really great.
Agreed.
They don't taste
True.
Really great.
True.
Right? Phobia's
over.
That's
so
why I want that marbling.
Bacon.
The marbling, right?
Well, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a place in our market for every consumer, and I want that consumer to have the product that they want to have.
Okay, here's what we're going to do coming up. We got a lot of questions. People want to know, do you need to be eating grass-fed beef, quote-unquote grass-fed beef? We need to talk about different cuts of steak. We need to talk about a lot of this stuff, and we're going to do it next. We have our bovine roundtable going on right here on the Ben and Skin Show, 105.3 The Fan. Right in the middle of our bovine roundtable, I got my buddy Ian, my buddy Matt, my buddy Dusty. We're all here chopping it up. Ben and Skin Show, 105.3 The Fan. Let's get right back into this. We were talking to Gavin Dawson earlier today, and he had a couple of questions, and some of them are really good, and this conversation just broke out during the break. And Matt, you made the analogy, not everybody can drive a Lamborghini, right?
Yeah, you know, what we're doing at Local Yokel, back where we left off, is we're a very niche program. So we're a Lamborghini, we're a Ferrari. That's not for everyone. And I do it absolutely acknowledge that we need to produce some Kias, and that's could be with a genetic program that doesn't take 500 days on feed like Wagyu, or our grass-fed program, which is 24 to 30 months of age versus 16-month, 18-month-old traditional produced commodity cattle. So I absolutely agree that there's got to be a price point for a wide range of people. Another thing I think we should do is let's pay a little bit more for money for beef, and consume a little bit less.
Well, okay, that's a great point of this is, like, we don't have to be as gluttonous as we are in general, but I like this question from Gavin, and I'll throw it over to you, Ian. What are the cuts that you can go cheap on, quote unquote cheap on, if you're trying to save money? What is that sort of middle ground where, hey, this is the right kind of steak to be doing at the house that's maybe a little more economical?
Wow, that's a tough question. I would say
torn. You know why he's torn? Because
yes.
He wants
why?
To tell you about the greatest steak on earth, but this man has offered me money to never tell anyone ever about a sirloin culotte.
So with that being said, I would assume...
Do you deny that accusation?
No,
sir.
I do not deny that accusation. But at the end of the day, if I had to spend money on a cheaper cut of meat, I would always go with the tenderloin for me, because it's always going to be tender. Those animals are not going to intermuscularly deposit fat in a tenderloin per se as much anyway, because the muscle, it's going to be very tender with some salt and pepper, some butter and garlic poured over it. the tenderloin, if I was going to pick the cheapest steak that was not upper third choice or prime, that was lower third choice, I'd pick a tenderloin. That would be my assumption. That would be my advice, is a tenderloin.
Dusty, do you agree?
I think it's a little unfair to confine that discussion to just steaks. We've got so many other cuts that are so great. I cook two very, not to brag, but I'm fixing to brag, so get a deep seat and get ready. but I cooked two excellent, I smoked two excellent briskets this 4th of July weekend. And I went to a place that Matt wouldn't be very happy with that I went to. And I searched around in the bin for a little while and found the ones that I wanted. But those were not, they might have been low choice briskets. But that stuff that we're going to cook low and slow, there are techniques Absolutely. That we can yeah. use to definitely yeah. improve that. And I'm concerned that in this country, with the foodie culture, we have more people that want to learn how to cook, and that's great, and that's been really good for us, because there are certain cuts of beef that are excellent to go out there and throw on the grill, and those higher quality meats like you get there at Loco Yokel, those are, you don't marinate those, you put a little salt and pepper on them, throw up your hands, holler time, and throw them on the grill. But I think the more we learn to do with those lower cost cuts of meat, like a brisket or a pot roast or a flat iron steak or things like that, opens us up to so much bigger market and so many other people that can enjoy and get that nutrition out of the beef.
I'm going to completely disagree with Ian, which happens on a regular basis. So
I do it almost daily.
He did almost a daily basis. Says that the tenderloin, I used to say, oh, a tenderloin's a tenderloin. And then, you know, I get to go to a lot of hotel banquet rooms and have tenderloins that suck. The whole reason Steak 101 came to 18 cuts of beef, right?
Yeah.
Well, I created Steak 101 because Full Carcass Butcher Shop, I've got to get rid of the whole animal. 80% of the animal is not fillet, is not strip, is not ribeye. So we've got all these other great things to talk about. So that's why we developed Steak 101, because we invented this steak out of the chuck flaps called a McKinney steak. Just give me a ribeye. Believing, right?
You're talking about
tasting
the McKinney cut?
Believing. Oh, I shouldn't have mentioned that one.
The McKinney cut is the greatest steak in the history of the planet. Right. It's a cube. It's like a long cube, and you just flip one side, one side, one side, one side, and you're done. It's the most tender, delicious steak I've ever had. What is that?
That's so we had these Wagyu carcasses, and you're trying to get as much steak as you can, because every day at the butcher shop back then, we were out of ribeyes by 2:00. I've got all this other stuff. So we're looking at this one particular muscle, thought, man, that may not be a steak on a regular cow, but on a Wagyu, that looks amazing. So we started playing around, and we fabricated that, and it's kind of shaped like a big fat number one.
Yeah.
And as a joke at the time, McKinney was the number one place in America to live, so we called it the McKinney steak. Right? And then we've got the sirloin culottes, you know, out of the chuck. We've got the chuck eye, which is the ribeye muscle, but it goes over to the chuck. A lot of retail stores call those a Delmonico. We've got a little 8-ounce muscle that there's only two of in an animal called a bistro filet. It's a teres major. So we can go a little bit down the chart. A bistro filet, even on a Wagyu, man, I can't afford Wagyu. How about $10? I'll change your life. Give me 10 to 12 bucks. I'll send you home with a Wagyu steak that you're going to love.
Oh my God.
Bistro filet.
Yeah. Dude, right. I've got Spinalis from you guys too.
These people about Spinalis.
That's incredible. That's the best part of the ribeye. And like me and my wife are going to split a ribeye. I'm like, here you go, honey. You take your part.
I'm taking the cherry off the top of the sundae. Go ahead and have the ice cream.
So you can buy it
and
straight
up. And
then
you can sell it to your wife as I'm giving you the center cut ribeye. And that sounds very good. Right. And then you get to have the Spinalis and say you don't want
fatty.
That.
I'm protecting you from the fat.
Right.
That's why Ian talks to customers a lot. That was something smoozing against. So, I want to bounce back real quick, Skin, to something you said. I take a little bit of issue with the way you talked about that we need to cut back on meat consumption in this country.
Okay, I agree with that.
Thanks, Matt. I was shocked. I'm glad I was standing up when you said
240 pounds per year should be the average consumption.
Got to get those numbers up. Those are rookie numbers, right? So
a lot of vegans out there. We got to make up some ground.
I don't think that we really have a meat problem in this country. I think what we mainly have is a starch and sugar problem in this country. If you look at a steak or even a 20% fat hamburger, a quarter pound of that, there's what, 150 or 200 calories in that? Matt, am I remembering that off the top of my head, right? It's a calories in, calories out world. It's biochemistry and physics. That's how it works. If you look at the bun and the french fries and the quadruple mucho grande 242-ounce Dr. Pepper that you bought with that hamburger, the patty ain't the problem.
Right.
These guys make things fat for a living, okay? That's their job. They make things fat for a living. And you don't do it with protein.
No, it's calories. It's carbohydrates. Calories.
And I guess what I'm trying to hint at there is this idea that we have this
outlook on food with, okay, give me my steak and you take your steak. But I think we generally, at least I know I do, we eat beyond what we should be eating, no matter what it is that's in front of us. We portion generally tend to overeat all the time.
Sure.
And so what my point was, you can buy and spend a little bit more money on a steak and just look at it as you're going to divvy it up a little bit more. Because a lot of families go, oh, there's four of us. I can't buy four steaks. You don't necessarily need to. You just have this idea that everyone's going to eat their own individual steak. And quite honestly, you don't have to do that portion wise. Right. That's a way that you can spend a little bit more money, get a higher quality cut or a higher quality level of food. But just people's perception is, well, this is theirs, this is his, and this is mine. You don't have to do it that way.
Well, I ain't that kind of doctor, but I'll act like I am anyway. But eating to satiety is a whole different deal than eating until you're injured.
And, right.
And we kind of have a culture in this country of yeah. You know, if you go eat Mexican food, if you don't feel like you have some sort of major yeah. intestinal distress before you walk out of the restaurant, just wasn't a good night.
Right.
So I think we have to work away from that.
Why do I have to eat an entire thing of chips before my meal arrives?
I'm trying to rock a deuce in the restaurant. That's my goal.
All right. Let's reset here, Skid. Let's reset and let everybody know who we have in the house.
Okay. So I got my buddy, Ian Hastings of Cargill. Cargill, Ian, you told me that is the biggest family-owned company in the world, correct?
Yeah, we're north of 150,000 employees. We're in 70 countries and regions. And our goal as a company is to provide safe, nutritious products to the entire world. We're not just based here in the United States. We're not based in Canada. I heard you talk on the show the other day after you had dinner at my house. Just understanding here in the United States, it's 1 billion meals a day. And
think
it's
about
a billion
that.
Years, billion meals tomorrow. And the fact that you have a perishable item that we have to produce year round that shows up at your grocery store. We may have some different ideas about how stuff is produced, but it is very impressive that your grocery store is stocked every day.
Yes.
And knowing that that stuff goes bad every 14 days, and the people in production agriculture care about the earth, they care about the environment, they care about the animals, that's their life. And I think it's important to understand when you start talking about producers that produce this food, whether that's your farmers, your ranchers, your beef producers, they truly care about those animals. They care about the earth because sustainability is the only way we move forward.
Okay. We also have here Matt Hamilton from Local Yokel.
Not the largest family-owned company, but family-owned.
But a good family company.
Right. Smaller.
How many kids do you have?
I have seven.
Seven.
Biggest family ever. Local Yokel is a great spot. And we also have with Cargill as well, Dr. Dusty Abney. And I want to hit back on what Ian was saying because I find this so interesting. What is one of the hurdles that you guys have to deal with to help the world or help 1 billion meals a day being produced? What is one of y'all's obstacles in making sure that that happens in a healthy, proper fashion?
Well, our biggest obstacle is almost always going to be the weather. In agriculture, we are completely and totally at the mercy of the weather. So the next time we get into a dry period, if you live here in the Metroplex and your lawn starts to turn a little bit brown and your neighborhood association tells you that you can only water on odd and even day, that's kind of a pain in the butt. If you're reliant on that grass as a food source for your animals and they are your livelihood, it's not a pain in the butt. It's a death knell to your family's entire money and economical scheme.
Right.
And so that's a huge hurdle. And one of the things that I do as a nutritionist is to look at what your resource base looks like, look what we need to put with it to get to your goals and get there efficiently. And to piggyback on Ian's point there from the welfare standpoint, I hear a lot about animal welfare on the internet and on the television, radio, and that sort of thing. And productive animals are happy animals and vice versa. Yeah. I'll also tell you that there's even the grouchiest, meanest old rancher that would shoot you in the kneecap for stepping foot on his place, he still gets a little teared up when a calf gets born on his place. He wouldn't tell anybody that.
Yeah.
But those guys love those animals and they love what they do. Nobody retires from production agriculture. They die out of it. Wow. And that's by choice. Wow. They love this industry and they want to be here and they want to produce the safest, most wholesome food supply in the world.
All right. I want to tell you guys where my love of steaks and Local Yokel and the love of grilling and getting out there and barbecues galore, etc., where it has me now. I'm at the crossroads. I called Skin about this the other day. I was like, dude, I think we need to buy a whole cow. I'm in the process of getting meat freezers in our garages and splitting a cow. And so how much can you really save when you go that route?
So you can save quite a bit because when you have a retail service counter, there are waste associated with that. There are labor costs associated with that. The majority of any retail sales happen on Saturday, Sunday, and Friday. So if you buy half of a cow or a quarter of a cow from me or any butcher shop, we're going to do that work on Tuesday, Wednesday, Monday, and there's some labor efficiencies. There's a lot of labor efficiencies. It's a pretty significant savings. Surprisingly enough, I talk more people out of a half of a cow into a quarter of a cow and out of a quarter of a cow into a box of beef because I want you to only have enough meat to last your family about 6 months. I'm really not looking for you to survive till Jesus comes back.
Right.
The beef in your garage. All right. And why? Because I hear the sad story all the time. Matt, my freezer, it went out. The GFI in the garage tripped. And it's a sad thing to throw away hundreds of dollars of meat. So, and we want you to have a fresh product, but there, yeah, absolutely, you can get some efficiencies. We'll split up a half a beef amongst four guys a lot. I mean, it's a little extra work, but that lets you get the savings, but split it up amongst two or three guys, four guys.
Considering the GFI problem you had on your microwave that one time.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Was that trying to recharge your iPhone off of that thing you saw on the internet?
Yes, exactly.
I'd tell you, too, that talking to somebody, no matter if you're a producer out in the field that's a cow-calf producer or if you're a consumer, I don't know that we reach out and talk to experts enough. You know, people ask Dr. Google a lot of questions, and you'll get an answer that's pretty fast. That doesn't mean that the answer is right. And so the thing I think of there, I go back to what I just talked about earlier. If you get a half of a beef from Matt, but you don't cook brisket or you don't do a lot of stew meat and that sort of thing, that stuff's going to go to waste. It's going to sit at the bottom of your freezer. You're going to pick the culotte off of it, or you're going to go in there and grab the ribeye, and that stuff's going to sink lower and lower in your freezer. So having somebody like Matt to go to say, hey, here's what I like to eat. What do you recommend that I do? I think is really a good idea.
Okay. So I want you to tell the story, Matt, because I tried to retell and I'm told it horribly. Where did fajitas come from? What is the story of fajitas?
So the hot skillet fajitas goes back to a Mexican food restaurant in Houston called Tia's. And Tia, as far as the meat research I've done knows, she invented hot skillet fajitas. And she did that because she realized that inside skirt steak has got a little chew to it, got a little bite, but it was really cheap. So you go back to the 60s and 70s, this was 25 cents a pound, 30 cents a pound beef. So Tia's like, hey, you know what? I could probably charge someone like $3 for fajitas on a hot skillet. So she figured out she could par cook it, grill it, put it on a sizzling cast iron skillet with onions, peppers, pico de gallo, and three tortillas and charge a lot of money for it. So that did really well for her. A regional Mexican food chain called El Chico's picked that up, and they took hot skillet fajitas regional. And then Applebee's and Chili's took it nationwide in the 90s, and they took the demand for skirt steak, cheap, throw it away, throw it in the grind, get rid of it somewhere. It's now more expensive than sirloin on a wholesale trading basis, right? Because a restaurant, it's a hard sell to get $16.99 for a 4-ounce, 3-ounce sirloin, but $16.99 for a quarter ounce of beef fajitas.
Wow.
All right. So that's kind of how beef fajitas happen. I told Daniel Vaughn with Texas Monthly Barbecue a few years ago, I said, you need to write an article, brisket's the next fajita meat. He's like, oh, you think? So there's this nationwide, now even international crave for Texas barbecue. Well, what happened with fajitas is the East Coast, West Coast restaurants, cost of living's higher, cost of food is higher. They can afford to charge more for a dish, therefore pay more for meat. So now we've seen brisket that used to wholesale for the low twos is now up in the threes because of the popularity and demand. Every cow I've ever seen has two briskets. Now, I don't know, maybe y'all have seen some have more, but there's two briskets.
Matt. There's only two.
Maybe with implants, four, but they are the pectoral muscles. But there's huge demand now for brisket, and you've seen the market respond. And that's why brisket is like that.
Last one. When you cook a brisket, are you supposed to go fat up or fat down?
Fat up.
No brainer.
I mean, I don't even know why there's a discussion.
Nice.
I've tried it to get a better bark by going fat down. And the point was still pretty good, but the flat was really disappointing.
Yeah.
Really disappointing. And you can have my brisket when you pry it out of my cold, dead hand.
That is an ender.
Wow.
Thank you so much.
I will put on my come and take it t-shirt and y'all can come.
That's Dr. Abney. He's Ian Hastings. This is Matt Hamilton from Local Yokel. We will blast out the Steak 101 class so people can learn about it. That's as much fun as I had on a Saturday in a long, long time. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming.
I hope our listeners got some good education
from all of that. Ben and Skin Show, 105.3 The Fan.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.